Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. All three levels of state courts issued decisions in the controversy over voters who may have moved, but those voters remain on the rolls for now.
Oh, hello, Milwaukee. Hello.
Exactly 6 months before Democrats nominate his opponent in Milwaukee, President Trump visits the city to ask Wisconsin voters to again vote for him in November. Assembly Republicans target three Democrats in their attempt to override a Governor Tony Evers veto, but the Democrats side with the governor. Republicans announce a tougher on crime agenda that goes against the plans of Evers and Democratic legislators to lower the number of prison inmates. All that and WISP Politics stock picks on the January 17 edition of Rewind, your week in review.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., we have led the show with this debate over voters who may have moved two or three times. It's kind of the gift that keeps on giving, but it is so important when you have potentially 200,000 movers in a state that went for Trump by less than 23,000. So let's just walk through the four things that happened this week before we hear from some of the elections commissioners and jump in after each one. First of all, the Ozaukee County judge fines the commissioners, three Democratic commissioners, in contempt, levies fines of $250 a day on the three Democrats, levies a fine of $50 a day on the Elections Commission. Now, you and I have covered the Capitol a long time. This is rare, isn't it?
Yes. He also took great offense to an unnamed commissioner, he said, who went on to a radio interview or TV interview and said, well, this is the opinion of one person. You know, there's more to come that, you know, you can't, basically, I can't be more clear. You will follow my order. You will respect my authority kind of thing. So he took a little personal offense to the reaction from those commissioners to his order.
Okay. That was done by a circuit court judge. Then you have the Court of Appeals, which stays the contempt finding and keeps the movers on the rolls. Any surprise there?
Interesting that they were waiting for the Supreme Court to act. Once the Supreme Court deadlocked and said, we're not going to take it up because it was a 3-3 vote, Kelly didn't participate. He's up for full term this spring.
Right.
3-3 vote means they can't take the petition. That then takes off the roadblock for the 4th District Court of Appeals to act, because remember, the appeals court said, we're going to wait because this issue is now for the Supreme Court with a request for them to take the appeal directly.
Yes.
There's a question if once that's filed with them that we are basically put on hold anyway. So we're waiting for them.
Okay. Now let's get to the third ruling by a state court. As you alluded to, the Supreme Court deadlocked 3-3 with Kelly stepping back because he's on the ballot in April. But my question is, do you think the 3-3 means we don't think it's ripe to take jurisdiction now? We reserve judgment for later. We want to hear what plays out in the Court of Appeals. Thoughts?
Here's the problem with trying to discern what the reasoning was. The three who dissented and wanted to take the case, they explained their reasoning. The three who didn't want to take it did not. Sorry. Those three are the two liberals in the court, Rebecca Dollet, Ann Walsh Braley, and the newest member, conservative Brian Hagedorn.
Yes.
That Hagedorn vote was a little bit of a shock to some people. We're just speculating, again, because they don't lay out what they thought. Hagedorn's a former appeals court judge. You know, there's some thought maybe he wanted to go through the appeals process for the normal process first,
yes.
But we don't know. The three dissenters, though, were quite vocal in saying, basically, you're denying the Supreme Court a chance of realness in 2020, because they lay out, Rebecca Braley, conservative, no relation to Ann Walsh Braley, said, if you look at the appeals court caseload, how long a case really takes, it's not coming back anytime soon. We have elections in February, in April, in May, August, and November. We're not going to get a chance to rule on this before those elections are done. We're not going to get a chance to give certainty, in her words, to local election officials about this because it's not coming to us in 2020.
Do we have any clue on, there's also a federal court lawsuit filed by the League of Women Voters. They haven't taken any step yet. Have they ordered a hearing date?
Rebecca Braley alluded to that, saying that because we're not taking this up, i.e. we the Supreme Court, it may be more of an invitation with the federal court to weigh in and provide some certainty. Now, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not going to opine about whether that's true or accurate. But there's a select case hanging out there. Same time, basically, we're status quo for all of 2020. Unless the appeals court has a lightning-fast response, it goes to the Supreme Court. Maybe after the April election, you know, there's a petition or a to rehear the case? I mean, I'm just throwing ideas out there.
This could go in any different way when you have three state courts and one federal court involved.
Yeah.
And then finally, for what is this, the third time, we had another 3-3 deadlock mm-hmm. by the Elections Commission on whether to purge. And that's where I want to go next. Let's hear from two of the commissioners, Mr. Knutson and Mr. Thompson, please.
The four-year list maintenance, where if you have not voted in 4 years, then we go through and we have a process where you get a mailing. The mailing tells you what will happen and that you'll be deactivated. It's very clear. It's been followed for years in Wisconsin without much controversy. If the legislature wants us to follow a path, I wish they'd say that, hey, the Eric Movers list should be handled just like the four-year maintenance list, and that would be an easy legislation to write and an easy fix.
Will has taken their fight. They've recognized in their own footnotes that we never acted pursuant to the statute. I mean, you know, their initial motion never had us re-registering people that had moved within the same municipality. So what I'm surprised about is that Will and Professor Essenberg got so personal on this and so vindictive that they actually asked the court for contempt. Their statutes, the chair of my commission recognized that the statute, it wasn't clear. We've had many, many discussions over the years. And for a party knowing that it was unclear and that there was a reasonable dispute as to what it stands for, to go to contempt is not a healthy way to have democracy.
Topic two, President Trump visited Milwaukee. It was symbolic in two ways. Exactly 6 months before the Democratic National Convention was going to pick a Democrat to oppose President Trump in a building almost next door. And number two, it was a night of the Democrats, the presidential debate in Iowa. So it was a very significant appeal for Wisconsin to again help reelect President Trump. Let's listen from excerpts from the president's speech.
We believe Wisconsin should be a sanctuary for law-abiding Americans, not for criminal aliens. In Wisconsin, the unemployment rate has reached its lowest level in history. How do you beat that soundbite, right? So now the people of Wisconsin are going to say, well, let's see, the state set a record, most successful it's ever been. And by the way, that's because we got a lot of help from a guy named Scott Walker, your governor. Ron Johnson, all those guys. And then they say, somebody's going to come and say, oh, we'll do a better job. Really? You're going to do a better job? The lowest in history by far. Your number one economic numbers by far. Oh, let's put somebody else in as president. I don't think so. With your help, your devotion, and your drive, we are going to keep on working. We are going to keep on fighting. And we are going to keep on winning, winning, winning. And ladies and gentlemen of Wisconsin, the best is yet to come. You watch.
So it was a raw meat speech in Milwaukee, symbolically in Milwaukee. And, of course, the context, the impeachment proceedings, which has now moved from the House to the Senate. Your impressions on the president's speech?
Feedback I got is kind of what you expect from a Trump speech anymore. There was red meat for the base. He bemoaned the new light bulbs, makes people look orange, he says. He bemoaned like the shower heads that he can't wash his beautiful hair. Toilets got to flush 10 times to get him to work. I mean, basically getting at these things that maybe people feel irritated by, that, you know, change is happening and I don't like it because it's inconveniencing me.
Right.
There was that. There were some lines that raised the eyebrows. If you're not a Trump fan, like, what's this guy talking about? You had protesters outside. So it's the usual kind of train coming to town with Trump.
But he filled Panther Arena to the point where some people couldn't get in.
Yeah.
But I have a question. Do you think it's significant that the President Trump did not mention Foxconn?
Well, if you look at the poll that Marquette released this week, you know why. There are still upside down, people think, generally speaking, in Wisconsin, the state will pay more than it's worth for what's putting into Foxconn. So it's not proving a winner. It's not the eighth wonder of the world. It's not a 20, how many million square feet is it supposed to be originally? Now we're like, it's still 1 million square foot.
1 million square, which is no minor construction.
1/20th,
yeah.
1/27th was supposed to be.
Right.
We're not doing the giant
Giant screens.
Screens, we're doing
not
smaller
doing
ones.
Gen 10, we're not doing Gen 6, we're not doing, I think the term is a major manufacturing facility.
To use the Trump kind of view on things, it's not a winner right now,
yeah.
Right? So from that perspective, I'm not surprised you mentioned it, but he's somewhat tied to that, you know, going forward. If there's not something, so that's some progress, some sign of like a production coming out of that plant in October, it's probably going to be an issue for him.
But Wisconsin media noted that Foxconn just pulled the plug on a major manufacturing facility in, I think, India.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Moving on. You alluded to the Charles Franklin poll, the MU poll. I know there was a lot in it, but I just want to focus on two things because impeachment is so timely. First of all, 47% of Wisconsin voters approved of the House voting to impeach Trump, 49% disapproved. Now, this is a margin of error of 4.1. Mm-hmm. No big change from the month before?
No, and you know, the Marquette poll, because it's such the gold standard for poll numbers in Wisconsin, there's also a lot of scrutiny of it. So this poll sample, Franklin, the director, has said that since 2017, he's had basically a plus one GOP model in his polls. Mm-hmm. This was like plus four, so you got to keep that in mind, any shift in that. But not really a whole lot of movement. It's really a fascinating picture of Trump in general because his job rating is getting a little bit better. So people think, well, that's maybe because of the economy, which is still humming along quite a bit. But if he's getting better marks because of the economy, why is he not like really gaining steam on these Democrats? Because he's margin of error with all of them. I think like Biden was plus four or five to like Trump was plus three on Warren, which they're all within the margin of error.
4.1%.
But a president who is riding an economic wave like he is should be blowing his opponents out of the water. So why is that not happening?
Okay, let's just land on that job. Approval rating, 48% approve, 49% disapprove, as you alluded to. The Charles Rankin poll again said the president beats who? Do you remember? He loses to Biden.
Well, so being a polling geek, Biden has an edge, but it's not outside the margin of error.
Yes.
Sanders was plus one or two, but again, not outside the margin of error. Warren was down, you know, minus three on Trump, but again, margin of error. So he's right there. It's from what I picked up from people this week was that it's still signs of a nip and tuck presidential race. It's all going to be the old cliche. It's all about turnout, right?
Yep.
And for the two sides, there are two questions. For Trump people, look, he won with a plurality in 2016 in Wisconsin, did not win a 50%. Can they find more Trump voters to turn out in 2016? Because we were like lower than usual for turnout in Wisconsin 4 years ago. So can you find more like basically white, non-college educated males who are kind of his kind of go-to group of supporters and get suburbanites who were unhappy with Trump 4 years ago to come back to the fold? For Democrats, can you take Clinton's cratering in Milwaukee County, the Green Bay market, and rural areas, rebound from that, and find those voters to bring them out? Because there's a path for both sides to up their turnout from 4 years ago.
Okay, and there's some linkage here to the drama in the Assembly on Wednesday. You had Assembly Republicans put up a veto override attempt.
Yeah.
And first of all, let's walk through the process. The bill said, well, Governor Evers vetoed a bill adopting a federal 75-hour training requirement to be certified as a nursing assistant. The veto kept in place the current state law, 120 hours of a training requirement. Now, here's where it gets really interesting to me, because three Democrats, Don Vruwink of Milton and Steve Doyle of Onalaska and Beth Myers of Bayfield, voted for this bill, and they were challenged, and we'll hear from Speaker Voss in a minute talk about that. They were challenged, hey, you voted for this bill once, break with your party to override the governor. And here's what I find most interesting, JR. I spent some time in a blue book yesterday. In Vruwink's district in 2016, three counties, 55% for Trump. In Steve Doyle's district, 2016, 51% for Trump. In Beth Myers' district, four of her counties, and she represents six in northern Wisconsin, 63% for Trump. So it's clear to me that Speaker Voss and Majority Leader Steinicke, who put out four press releases on this, were targeting them to set them up for November, correct?
Yes, but take Vruwink out. If you look at just his district, Trump lost that district by 6.5 points. So if you think Clinton really had a poor performance in 2016. So even a bad Democratic candidate for president is going to get plus 6.5 in Rui's district. I don't think he's really in danger. Difference, though, is Doyle's district, Trump won that one by 3.5 or 6 points, Myers by 3.1 points. So there's the issue. Now, here's the thing. A guy like Doyle, much like Todd Novak, in Southwest, Republican in southwestern Wisconsin, they've been able to opt from the top of the ticket, in part because they have a brand outside of the party label. So for Doyle, it's important to have that guy who can reach across the aisle. Here's some things. One, we both know from years covering the legislature, you don't break with your governor on a veto override. Right. The only time I remember that happened in exhibit numbers was like concealed carry in 2003 or four with Doyle and Democrats.
Right.
All right.
Was that where former Representative, now Judge Sherman, saved him?
Flipped his vote.
Yeah.
From backing the bill to pulling the veto. It survived by one vote. Think of how many times Republicans try to override Walker vetoes of their bills and provision the budget in 8 years. You just don't, it just doesn't happen. So they did what they were expected to do as people inside the Capitol bubble. That said, it can hurt you back home with that perception when you reach across the aisle.
Because we're dealing with a health care issue. Certified nursing assistants. And Steinicke, after the vote, said the shortage of CNA, certified nursing assistant, is especially dire in northern Wisconsin, a specific jab at Myers.
But now let's look at the big picture again. Look at Wisconsin this fall. There's no statewide race besides the presidential race. There's maybe one congressional race that'll be even remotely competitive. It's basically going to be a nationalized election, right?
Yeah.
The top of the ticket. So will this vote come back to bite Steve Doyle or Don Ruink or Beth Myers? I don't think anybody's going to pay attention to it in October.
I go the other way. I think it could play a role.
The impression I got is it's about the top of the ticket. What happens with Trump and whoever's running against him? The caveat is, can you take this vote and build it into an argument of these guys are partisan hacks,
yes,
and not people across the aisle? But this one vote, it's not enough. You
okay.
have to have more than this.
Time to hear a short exchange between Speaker Voss on this issue and Representative Doyle of Onalaska, who we've been talking about.
While AB 76 is not a silver bullet, it definitely takes a step forward in addressing this shortage. And that's why we had Democrats who signed onto the bill. And I'd like to thank the representatives from the 74th, the 12th, and the 43rd for signing on way up front to co-author this bill, because they knew it was important, not just for Wisconsin, but for their individual districts. Unfortunately, Governor Evers has put you and us in a very difficult position today. What's more important, playing politics with your governor who made a bad choice, or standing with your constituents when you give your word to your constituents, when you change it, it's called a lie. And I know nobody here would lie to their constituents.
If there is anything that sums up my position on this bill, it is one of the comments made by the Speaker when he spoke at the very beginning of this debate. He said, this bill is not a silver bullet. I don't feel like I'm kowtowing to the leadership in my party, but also I'm not going to kowtow to people who send out press releases saying that I'm going to kowtow. Here's where I'm at. I am going to vote to sustain the governor's veto because this is not a silver bullet. If we say we're done, the governor's veto is going to be overridden, and that's the end of the story, that is the real tragedy here.
Despite those, despite the GOP challenge, Representatives Ruink, Doyle, and Myers voted to sustain the governor's veto, which means the record, no governor's veto has been overridden since 1985, stands.
Mm-hmm. Don't forget, even if that cleared the assembly, would have gone to the Senate, where Dave Hansen's retiring, Jennifer Schilling is minority leader. Like, it wasn't going to fly in the Senate, even if they got to the assembly.
I understand, but it made for some excellent drama. Okay, mm-hmm. JR, before we talk about some of the specific provisions in the Republicans' tougher on crime bills, let's listen to what they said at the West Dallas Police Department on Monday.
How can families go home knowing that they're not safe? Their cars, their children? This initiative and these people standing here are not just about feel-good legislation. They're about changing the environment so that Milwaukee can grow and become a safer community, which is in everybody's best interest, Republicans and Democrats.
And we want to make sure that if somebody has a dangerous weapon and they use it illegally, that there is a penalty for that. Because until we put teeth in our laws that are already on the books, they're not going to be effective.
My bill is pretty simple. It says that after your third retail theft, that there'll be a mandatory minimum of 6 months. We're seeing more and more of these instances where there's very organized efforts to come in and shoplift and do it in mass. Unfortunately, oftentimes we're seeing deferred prosecutions on these, or we're seeing charges dropped, and then we just get repeat and repeat and repeat. And I don't think it's unreasonable to say that after the third time you've been arrested for shoplifting, that you really have to face some consequences.
You know, Governor Evers ran on a platform of reducing prison population by 50%. You are not going to have safe neighborhoods if you have that as your main priority. And that's a clear difference between us and Governor Evers, and I think you're going to see that highlighted in the coming weeks as we discuss what our solutions are for these problems.
So this is a major package introduced by the party that has the votes to pass all or some of them. So let's walk down a few of them. Require revocation of probation or parole for someone charged with a new crime. Any PS on that or keep going?
Just go. I'll give you an overview.
All right, great. Make ineligible for parole or probation, those convicted of more violent crimes, child trafficking and abuse, bank robbery, arson, armed burglary. Mandatory 6 month sentence, that was Senator Strobel, for someone convicted of third offense, shoplifting. 4, prosecutors must get judges' approval before dismissing or diverting to a deferred prosecution program, felon in possession charge for someone with a violent crime record, and, those are 4 of the provisions. Okay, give me your take on those 4.
Just 1 week ago, we had Democrats put a proposal out of criminal justice reform trying to reduce our prison population.
Representative Goyke, Senator Taylor,
Governor Evers talked about this during the campaign, that he wanted to connect the dots on overhauling our prison population in Wisconsin. What are we doing? We're talking about criminal justice reform nationally with President Trump taking up the torch on this issue as well. So what's at play? Well, one, the two parties are nowhere near the same spot when it comes to this stuff. 2, they can be tough votes for vulnerable members. I mean, the maps at this point, Republicans are pretty much maxed out where they can be, except for, again, with Trump, Beth Myers up in northern Wisconsin, Nick Milroy, they easily won re-election 2 years ago, 2018. But with Trump on the ballot, maybe it makes it more difficult. So maybe stuff like this can be a vote you hold against them. 2 or 3, these are largely suburban Milwaukee Republicans, who need to gin up suburban votes for the president. Is that a motivator? Maybe not, but you can't ignore that they're appealing to suburbanites about this crime issue. So maybe that's part of it. I mean, there are all kinds of layers like that. But the bottom line is that we don't have an agreement in the Capitol right now, and I'm not sure where the governor is, but this runs counter to what he's been pushing and the currents nationally about crime.
Right. But still, you had 10 or 12 GOP legislators from both houses, and that sends a signal to us that some of these bills are going to be debated.
Yeah. And everywhere I've lived, the biggest city is the big bad city, right? So if you're an outstate lawmaker Democrat who's in maybe a tough race, how your constituents aren't real, like they view Milwaukee a certain way. So, they worry about their safety when they go to Milwaukee. I mean, this could be a difficult vote for you.
Right. And as you said, the Governor Evers and Democratic legislators oppose any changes that would increase prison populations. Representative Sanfilippo said the governor wants to cut prison populations in half. Is that a misstatement?
I can't remember exactly what the governor said during the campaign, but he wants to reduce the population. And I remember the big fight in the campaign was, well, if you want to cut it by that much, of course, he didn't say he didn't say over what time span. Is that over a year, 10 years, 15, 20 years? He never really said what it was.
Right.
And there was this big debate where Republicans say, aha, if you want to cut it by that much, you're going to release all these violent offenders. He said, no, I don't want to release anybody who's a violent offender. We're going to try and do this. So, for what it's worth.
Okay, let's end it this way with a quote from Representative Goyke, who's worked on this issue extensively and is a member of Joint Finance. He says, criminal justice reform is one of those issues this session that really was the victim of the breakdown of bipartisanship in the Capitol. Do you agree with that, or is this never an issue that Dems and Repubs are going to agree on?
Hard to say again. I mean, it's just a different trend nationally that we're seeing in what's being brought up in this package.
Okay. New topic. You, as always, are all over campaign finance numbers. And so, you know, the numbers that you reported this week, Wisp Politics reported this week, shows a very large lead for Justice Dan Kelly, who will be on the ballot, assuming he survives the primary in April. He doubled up on Dane County Judge Jill Karofsky, and Ed Filone. Give me your take on some of the numbers now that we're now showing on this graphic.
So Kelly's haul for like the six-month period is second only that I could find to Shirley Abramson back in 2008, ahead of her re-election in 2009. So Abramson was a unique figure among court candidates because she, first female justice in Wisconsin history, longtime chief justice, allowed her to build a national network of fundraisers, which is unusual for a Supreme Court justice. Kelly has got a network of deep-pocketed conservative donors around the Wisconsin area. If you go through his report, you find Dick Uihlein, Elizabeth Uihlein, you find Diane Hendrick, you find like conservative mega donors from Wisconsin. Karofsky, look at her report, you're seeing like traditional Dem donors. I saw Jim Doyle in her report, for example. Lynn Uihlein, now no relation to the other Uihleins. She's a longtime Dem donor, right? So she gave Karofsky money. We're seeing the partisans line up behind these two candidates. Now, doesn't mean that Filone should be forgotten. He got endorsed by Block this week, which is a group in Milwaukee that does door-to-door in a low turnout primary. Yeah. If you have infrastructure, that's a help. He'll be contested Milwaukee mayoral and county executive primary, which could boost turnout in Milwaukee, which could help. But there's a sense that voters like judicial experience when you're running for the court, so that may give Karofsky an edge. The big question about Kelly is he's going to have the resources. Will he have the turnout that he needs in April, and will he have the help of outside groups? And first, turnout, we've talked about it a number of times. If there's a presidential primary going on for Democrats and not one for Republicans come April, that should boost Democratic turnout. If that's still going on, it makes Kelly's life very difficult. Now, there's not a guarantee, but it's very difficult.
Okay, but it sounds like your takeaway is you were surprised at the amount of cash raised by Justice Kelly, correct?
I think it was very, very solid. I mean, he's the incumbent. The conservatives are jazzed up after winning this past spring when people thought Brian Hagedorn was a lost cause. People rallied to his side, some outside groups, and got him across the finish line. So there's some energy about that. Okay. People want to defend Kelly. But those outside groups come this spring, I think there are two camps. One saying, we're not going to let it happen last spring to Hagedorn happen to Kelly where people abandoned him. We're going to fight no matter what. Another group saying, well, we're going to prepare for battle, but we're going to see how the polls look. We're going to see what turnout's going to look like. We're going to see if there's a primary going on that could make this difficult, maybe conserve our resources for the fall if there's not a great shot. But if there's a shot, you could get some real help.
Okay, good points. Two-minute drill. Stock picks.
All right, so rising. So Tony Evers, the governor raised $1.7 million his first year in office, which by the old standard is not bad. Not great, but not bad. And why I say the old standard is this. Scott Walker destroyed the old standards. He is, for a state candidate, the most prolific fundraiser I or anybody else has ever seen in Wisconsin. So you can't really compare Evers to Walker because Walker had periods, for example, where he had no campaign finance limits on what he could raise in contributions because of the recall. A month into his term, he was a national figure because of the Act 10 fight. He became a conservative hero because of that fight. He ran for president. I mean, he's just so unique. So go back to Jim Doyle. All right, Jim Doyle raised $1.5 million first year in office. So Evers outperformed that. But that was 16 years ago. So it's just a different world. The challenge for Evers is this. He's got to build on this number. All right, he's got to get more aggressive fundraising-wise. He's not known as somebody who loves the money chase. He doesn't have that reputation. But if you want to be successful, you have to kind of do that. So what can he do? Two, don't forget his poll numbers, plus 11 the Marquette poll. So that was, you know, pretty decent. But I guess the thing is, Evers is okay by what we've seen traditionally, but it's time to kind of start ramping it up a little bit.
Okay.
Next, the state superintendent race. Carolyn Sanford Taylor announced this week she's not going to seek a full term. She's an Evers appointee. It wasn't a shock to Dems I talked to because the perception was that when Evers talked to her about the appointment, she asked, well, if I commit to it, do I have to run for a full term? So there's a hint already she wasn't maybe interested in running for a full term as kind of state superintendent. The thing is, nobody's really announced so far. This opens the door to kind of start kicking the tires. The question is for business groups and pro-school choice groups, will you commit money to this race if there's a good candidate, and will that good candidate emerge?
Okay. And
falling. Concealed carry opponents, the last Marquette poll we had this week, now it's a 70% approval rating of concealed carry. Why is that notable? When this debate raged for years in the Capitol, it was very polarizing. Even in 2012, the Marquette poll that came out that January, I believe, it was upside down. Now you're talking a 70% issue. Charles Franklin, the director, said basically it's become normal. People live with it now for almost 10 years. It's become just a custom. So it's the opponents, it's just faded away.
Okay, now let's look ahead quickly to next week. The governor is going to give a second state of the state on 7 p.m. on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. Why don't you and I sit down on Tuesday and give a little preview of that?
Okay.
Sound good?
Great.
I'm Steve Walters.
I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for January 17.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.